Well, is organic gardening the secret to living better? Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Our next guest is Stephanie Rose. She's an award-winning author, freelance writer, instructor. She's an international speaker. She encourages better living through plants. And her new book is called Garden Alchemy, 80 Recipes and Concoctions for Organic Fertilizers, Plant Elixirs, Potting Mixes, Pest Deterrence, and more. So we're going to talk with her about how you can make your garden better the organic way. Are you interested in creating your own seed tape? Do you have questions about plant propagation? What about organic gardening? Love to hear from you. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Stephanie Rose with us by phone. Thanks for joining us, Stephanie.
Thanks for having me, Larry.
Great to have you here. So what is garden alchemy? How do you define that?
Well, it's all about getting to know the soil and the plants the way Mother Nature has intended us to garden. We've gone kind of far away from how Mother Nature does grows plants and grows gardens. We've gone to a place where we clean up everything out of our garden and we put it into a bin and we send it away to get composted somewhere else, and then we buy that material back to put back into our gardens. And this is just not really an efficient way to do it. So we have this... I feel like we're wasting our time and our money and our energy when Mother Nature has this really easy way of us doing it organically and naturally.
So how did you become an alchemist?
Well, I was a city girl, so I always grew up in the city and didn't have any experience with gardening. But out of necessity, I started gardening because it saved my life. I became suddenly ill and disabled and was no longer able to get out of bed. I had paralysis and was severely disabled. I was in bed for almost 2 years, and over the getting every book on gardening and natural living and basically living from scratch. And I sat in bed and I read the books, and then I went out to my yard and I did a little bit of gardening here and there. And I learned everything the DIY way. So I learned all about organic gardening and growing herbs, vegetables, fruit trees, all that just from scratch. And then how to cook and use those things in my garden. I then got into permaculture because I thought, you know, how we're doing it doesn't seem to be the easiest way. And permaculture is all about creating these systems that support each other and allows the land to rebuild itself and regenerate without so much intervention from us gardeners. And then I studied herbalism and realized that there's all this plant medicine available that we can add back to the garden to help us. So all those things came together over, you know, 15 years. And I wanted to bring that all together in Garden Alchemy so that I could share it with others, this DIY way of gardening.
Well, it's really a fascinating book. And you might just talk a bit more about how the book is organized. There are lots of great photos. And I tell you what, some of those concoctions that you have in the back are through the book. I'm looking at them like the garden, Comfrey Garden Smoothie. I'm looking at that and thinking, oh, I could drink that.
It actually smells good enough to drink, too, because it's got this cucumber-like aroma. And so when I made it, I thought, oh, my goodness, like, plants are going to love this, but I better not drink it. You know, it's set up like a cookbook, right? So
yeah.
The idea was to make it so easy and accessible for folks to get out there and, you know, see what sort of things are growing in their garden and what things might apply to them. The first chapter is based on soil, and it includes a lot of experiments. So it's about you getting to know your soil. It's not about knowing the exact formula of your soil, because, I mean, typically in our gardens, we're not, we don't have agriculture land. We're not growing monocrops. The idea is to get to know the soil composition, get to know the general pH, and you can do that with really easy home tests. And once you know that, then you can start to adjust how you're gardening to work with your soil composition and work with your soil pH.
So that's right off the bat. And And then you go from there to everything from plant propagation to, well, go ahead and tell us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, starting seeds and propagating your own plants, you can't get healthier plants and a more efficient or less expensive way to do it than to start plants from seed or to start them from cutting. And again, it's really easy. So using DIY ways that, you know, you can make newspaper pots or even take toilet tissue rolls and turn those into seed starting pots, make a little greenhouse out of an old salad container. You don't really need anything special to start your own seeds. But when you do, and you start them from the very beginning, then you're able to ensure that the health of the plant is, when it's grown up, was started in the right way. Because what we do in the foundation, what we do in that first little bit of its life, ends up making stronger plants that are more easy, that are more resilient to disease and to pests.
Well, actually, go ahead.
Well, then after that, it goes into more of the recipes. So once we do some of the projects for seed starting and some of the experimenting with soil, then it goes right into making your own potting soils, fertilizer mixes, how to make garden teas, composting. There's a whole chapter on making great compost and then turning that into compost tea to feed your garden.
Well, I really found the book interesting. We've got a lot of little side stories as well throughout the book, and I found them fascinating. Let's go back to soil. That's always seems like that's the aim of most gardeners. Well, it should be, I guess, the improving the soil. And so you're saying we don't need to know much before we get started with our soil, or do we? I always tell people to get a soil test.
Well, and you can do a soil test to get the basics, but, you know, the soil tests that we send out to the labs don't give us a ton of information. And the idea is, how much do you really need to know? I mean, if you get a sense for your for whether or not your soil is acidic, alkaline, or neutral, then you know which plants you're going to be able to grow more effectively. And you can work really hard to add amendments and really try to change that soil. Or you can look to the plants that grow really well in the soil that you already have.
So testing the soil is, I guess there are tests you could do at home that the plant analysis laboratories might not, that might provide the same information. But you're talking about testing the soil by, in some ways, by the plants you put in it.
It's a bit of a different way of looking at it. Rather than figuring out all the different nutrients that are, I guess I went backwards, because when you look at soil composition tests, well, people will go and figure out what their soil composition is. I have clay soil, I have sandy soil, and you're looking for that balance of loam. When you look at how you amend your soil to fix clay soil, to fix sandy soil, the answer is always the same: add organic matter. So if you're adding organic matter and you're doing the same result, then really, do you need to have that really detailed test for your home garden? Or could you just take the chance of adding organic matter into your soil and watching to see how the plants respond to it and see how they grow? I think unless you have some serious disease issues, some toxicity concerns, that you can really amend your soil with organic matter and see how it improves.
Talking today with Stephanie Rose, great to have her with us. Her book is titled Garden Alchemy, 80 Recipes and Concoctions for Organic Fertilizers, Plant Elixirs, Potting Mixes, Pest Deterrents, and a whole lot more. I found it quite interesting reading, and I'm pretty sure you will as well. As we visit with her today, you're going to have a chance to join in at 800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You talk in the book about pH and how it affects plants. What are your favorite ways to change pH?
Well, what I was saying was that I don't like to work on changing the pH of the soil as much as I like to work with it. So the idea of finding the plants that really thrive in the soil pH that you have, I mean, I think Wisconsin is fairly acidic soil, am I right?
Well, in some parts of the state, at least, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm in Vancouver, BC, Canada, and it's a rainforest here. And so that rain does add a lot of acidity to our soil. So we have gorgeous blueberries and rhododendrons and dogwoods and grow wonderful cranberries. And celebrating those plants that grow in that pH means that it's a lot less work for the garden and a lot less work for the gardener.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that. In some parts of the state, blueberries, for example, grow very well. And in other parts of the state, people work very hard at amending the soil to make it more acidic. And you're saying maybe we shouldn't do that.
That's my point. And so all the recipes in the book and the way of experimenting and observing is about getting to know your land, the land that you garden on, and trying to work with it. It's about becoming in sync with the garden.
Well, I'm glad we're in sync today, and I'm looking forward to the rest of our conversation. Stephanie Rose, our guest, the book Garden Alchemy. We'll take a quick look at the news, and then we will be back with her. And you can call in with your questions as well. 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller. Well, is organic gardening the secret to living better? Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. We've been talking about some recipes, I guess you could say, for your garden with our guest, Stephanie Rose, award-winning author, freelance writer, instructor, international speaker. She encourages better living through plants. And her new book is Garden Alchemy, 80 Recipes and Concoctions for Organic Fertilizers, Plant Elixirs, Potting Mixes, Pest Deterrents, and more. Certainly looking for your questions and comments as we move along today. What are some of your go-to recipes as a gardener? What would you like to know about organic fertilizers, for example? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Sarah from Eau Claire has been waiting a bit. Stephanie. So let's go to Sarah and see what's on her mind. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I'm wondering, we're going to be putting up a hopefully a decent-sized garden here this spring. And I'm wondering about agricultural runoff and whether or not there's some sort of test that you can test to see how much, if there's any residual pesticides or herbicides, Roundup in the ground. A lot of agriculture around, and there would be it's lower than some neighboring fields. I'm wondering if there's some sort of test you could get a baseline on that. And then if not, I'm wondering if a raised bed would be helpful, if you can, you know, raise it up a couple feet, maybe reduce the amount of like water runoff. I realize there'd still be air, you know, some air.
Sure.
Effects, but I wonder if your guests had any thoughts on those.
All right. Thanks, Sarah. What do you think, Stephanie?
Well, I think that in that case, if you're looking for whether or not there's agricultural runoff, toxic pesticides, herbicides, that sort of thing, then it is best to send away for a soil sample. So Larry, you probably know better where to send the soil samples to in your area. I know where to send them in Vancouver, BC, but
sure.
I don't think they're here.
Well, there's the UW Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory. If you just type in Soil and Plant Analysis Laboratory, Sarah, you can it'll pop up.
So yeah, Sarah, if your soil comes back and it says that it's it doesn't have any concerns with it, then you can do some of the tests that we have in Garden Alchemy. In the first chapter, there's learning about your soil composition and learning about your soil pH, and then you can use the other recipes to amend your garden organically and really build that soil. I always caution people when they move into a new location to remove all that soil and bring in new soil, because that soil is very valuable, and if it's healthy already, or even if it's unhealthy but not toxic, you can amend it with a lot of natural amendments that will help to really improve the soil without a lot of extra cost.
Yeah, so you don't have to get rid of it. You just want to, you may be in a situation, okay, let's amend it a bit then.
Yes.
All right. Sarah, does that help?
It does, yeah. If we do send the samples off, if it does come back with some toxicity, do you have any suggestions on that? Or is there something in your book that might speak on amending it with toxicity?
Well, there's lots, believe it or not, there's lots of weeds and plants that are really good at taking out that toxicity. You have to look for specifically what it is you have in your soil. What I would do is plant a whole bunch of wild plants that are able to help to regenerate the soil and leave that for a few years. I love your idea about raised beds. So if you want to garden right away, get those raised beds in. But I think using those plants as biofilters to draw the toxins out into their leaves and then dispose of those, that's a really great way of filtering your land without having to, do anything too dramatic, like remove all the soil.
And you can compost those plants.
Yes.
And that's...
Absolutely.
You compost pretty much everything, don't you, Stephanie?
Anything that's not that doesn't have disease or pest infestations, I compost everything, yeah.
Okay, so Sarah, there you go. You can join in too. Number to call 1-800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. You talk about an interesting thing for me is it's like the sphagnum moss and all those kinds of materials that we add to soil sometime. I know sphagnum moss has, there's some questions, or you have some questions about it.
Yes, well, peat moss, I mean, here in Canada, peat moss takes up a large chunk of our country. And peat moss is a really great carbon sink. So every time, even though the peat moss bogs are protected and they are regenerated when they are harvested, every time you harvest the peat moss, you're releasing that carbon back into the atmosphere. And that's pretty much the opposite of what we want to be doing right now on the planet. So the other thing with peat moss is that it's not as superior of a soil amendment as it could be. It is highly acidic. And when it dries out, if you've got it in a potting mix or something and it dries out, you know that it's very hard to rehydrate again. It just becomes a crust on the top of your soil, and it can end up being the demise of container plants. So I make my own peat-free potting, peat-free alternative just by using compost, coconut core, which is a byproduct of the coconut industry, and it's sterile and also not acidic, and then either rice hulls or perlite. So perlite is a mined product, but rice hulls are available in U-brew locations and are great little sponges to hold on to water inside your soil mix, but also create that aeration, that little bits of air throughout the soil mix. And they're dirt cheap. So it's a great way to make dirt, to have dirt cheap soil amendments.
And you've got that recipe. That's one of those recipes, right?
Yes.
In the book.
Yes. Yeah, and I use that peat alternative recipe as the basis for 13 more potting soils, different potting mixes that you can use for hanging baskets, container gardens, for cactus and succulents, depending on what it is that you're growing. There's little adjustments to the recipes. Seed starting mixes are a big one, making sure that you've got a nice sterile seed starting mix and then a transplant mix to move them up into afterwards. Again, with all organic materials that help to support the plants from the beginning all the way to when they go in their containers.
Well, since we'll be here in Wisconsin, it won't be too long before we start in with the seeds and starting them indoors. Give us an example of what you would use in that situation.
Well, I like to use so I take that peat alternative mix and the compost that's in it. Compost is really great when you're using it outside, but you want to sterilize it if you're going to be starting your seeds indoors. And also because you don't want the bacteria and fungi and microorganisms that are living in compost are fabulous for your garden outside and for the, and for the in-ground soil. But when you're starting seeds, you want to give them a really sterile environment. So you can either purchase sterilized compost, or you can put your compost in, if you're doing a little bit, you can put it in the oven, just lay it out on a tray and put your oven on low and bake it for, until it hits the temperature that allows the soil to just kill off those microorganisms and become sterile. If you're doing a lot, you can put it out on a tarp in the sun. So you might not be able to do that till it warms up a little bit, But once you've done it, then you can keep that sterilized compost mix in a bin in your home, sealed, and then just be able to use that throughout the year for seed starting and other things. Indoor plants as well.
Yeah, what about recycled pots?
Oh, I love using recycled pots. I mean, you don't have to go out and buy a bunch of plastic things. You probably already have plastic things in your kitchen, like yogurt containers and, you know, all sorts of things like that, that you can use as seed starting pots. But I like the biodegradable ones the best. So I've got a couple of examples in there, how to make your own newspaper pots really easily. So everybody can find a newspaper somewhere, be able to make the pots that break down right away when they go into the garden. Or toilet tissue rolls, just a few little cuts, and you can fold them into this little origami shape that ends up being a really great, more sturdy pot for something that's going to take a longer time to germinate, maybe be in the seed tray longer. Or you can even use egg cartons for things like lettuce and peas that you would want to plant in a row, and then you could just slide those peas or lettuce seeds right into the garden.
Well, you know, as you were talking, I was paging through the book a bit, and I was reminded, I'd seen this earlier when I was looking through it, you talk about seed bombs. And Judith Sears-Poisson, who was my former producer, made seed bombs one year. She made a bunch of them and brought some to work, and I took some out and sort of, quote, planted them in the neighborhood. And they didn't all come up, but a lot of them came up. Talk about seed bombs and why you want to make them.
Well, seed bombs are great. I mean, you're laughing when you talk about planting them, because it's really fun to toss these things right into places, gardens, barren spaces that need some rewilding. So if you've got, you know, our previous caller who had a large plot of land, maybe she doesn't want to have to go out there and sow the entire scope of land with seeds. She can make a bunch of seed bombs and then start just broadcasting them and throwing them and allowing them to germinate. You know, not all the seeds germinate, but in a seed bomb, you're packing them with so many seeds and with different varieties of seeds so that they, when they break down, so it's a mixture of clay and compost and then a bunch of seeds, usually a seed mix, hopefully something that is native to the land that you're working with. And then when you toss them, the rain breaks them down, and then many of those seeds will germinate. Probably not all of them, but the ones that are meant to be will grow.
And I have to tell you, it's to me, it seems like such a great thing to do with kids.
Oh, it's so fun for kids to get their hands dirty and roll them and make the seed bomb. But then even more fun when you get a slingshot and they're helping you plant them.
And you've got a bunch of recipes in your book for seed bombs.
That's right. Yeah, I wanted to give different recipes for ideas of things people could plant. So if they wanted to attract birds and like hummingbirds or other like pollinators, like butterflies, or if they wanted to have, you know, herbal gardens. So start growing a bunch of different herbs and letting them rewild out in some of the spaces. What is it that you want to, you know, what kind of flowers do you want to have? If the soil is really prone to drought, then you could use drought tolerant ones. If it's shady, you could have shady seeds that love the shade or that will germinate, and flowers that will grow well there. Or even ones that are like a ground cover. So it really depends on what the land is asking for. You know, if you're just wanting to introduce wildflowers, then I would go to a local seed company and get a trusted wildflower, because you don't want to introduce a non-native species or a species that is invasive. So that's one of the things that when you're rewilding a space is to be respectful of the seeds that you're planting. But there's definitely lots of ideas to get people started.
That's for sure. And there are some disease and other kinds of issues and things that you deal with in your book that I found interesting. You had chamomile tea to treat damping off.
Yeah. So chamomile is a great antifungal, and we all probably have some chamomile tea, dried chamomile flowers, so that, you know, we drink it at night so we can head off to sleep, or it's very easy to find. But you can grow chamomile in your garden, and you can take the fresh stems and the flowers and brew that into a fresh tea, or you can use it You can use the dried tea if you don't have it. You can dry the dried flowers. Steep it for 24 hours overnight. Then the next morning, strain off the flowers and you put it in a spray bottle and you can just spray the seedlings to prevent damping off fungal disease to growing.
I love that idea. It really is. It works. You've tried it and it works.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's very rooted in permaculture as well. It's something that's used very often in permaculture farms and different practices.
I really like that idea. And you have a nice section on propagating cuttings as well that any of us can do.
Yeah, well, propagating cuttings, I mean, this is a great way to take one very special plant that you have and turn it into a bunch of plants, especially if we have a large space that we want to, you know, inexpensively recreate. One of the easiest ways to do it, I mean, you can propagate in soil, you can propagate in water, depending on whether or not the stem is woody or if it does better with, you know, if it's woody, it'll do a little bit better in soil. If it's a nice thin green stem, then it should just propagate and grow some roots just sitting in a glass of water. But I also, you can also apply a willow water, which is it has a natural rooting hormone. So willow has a natural hormone that helps to stimulate rooting. So instead of going out to the garden center and buying the powder to dip your stem into, you can just cut some young willow branches and put them in boiling water, steep them again 24 hours, then strain that out and use that willow water to helps to water your transplants. The other thing you can do is use it to water your seedlings because it'll help to stimulate the roots for the new seedlings as well.
I think it's another really great idea. Well, willows, you know, it's so easy to propagate them themselves, and that's it's apparently because they have that rooting hormone right in their branches.
That's right, yeah. And there's also salicylic acid, which is an antifungal, antimicrobial. So it's not only got the rooting hormone, but willow altogether helps to prevent the, you know, fungal diseases and bacteria that might prevent the root from taking form in the first place.
Yeah. And you had one kind of fun thing, you know, plant pests, all of us have that kind of problem in our gardens. And you had something for aphids that I thought was interesting.
Yeah, this is where I hope I don't get hung up on. But this is what I've been using for years, and it's hard to get comfortable with it. But once you do, you realize how well it works. The idea of having a certain number of pests in your garden to build that threshold to make it worth the time of the predatory insects to come into your garden and do the work for you. If you're constantly chasing away the aphids, then what are the beneficial insects going to eat? They're not going to come to your garden. They're going to be going somewhere else. So I create an aphid nursery. So a sacrificial plant away from the plants that I want to protect that aphids absolutely love. Plant those and let the pest population get out of control so that the beneficial insects come in and chomp away at all those aphids. And then when their bellies are not too full, but they don't have any aphids left, they're going to start going in between the lettuce beds and making sure that they're clean as well.
I thought that was a great idea. John wondered about scale and how you deal with scale on plants.
Well, I think overall, the question I get asked the most when I talk about Garden Alchemy or when I go around and I do my talks on the book is the specifics about how to deal with one pest. And the concept of Garden Alchemy, and in the chapter, it talks about how do you build a diverse enough garden that has enough biodiversity that the pests aren't getting out of control and keeping everything is keeping within balance. If things are getting with out of balance, like there's too many issues with scale or too many issues with aphids or too many issues with, you know, some sort of cabbage moth or beetle or whatever, then the important thing is to look at the host plants and whether or not they're valuable for your garden, and then try to introduce the predators so that it's taking care of the problem for you. I'm not one who sprays anything in my garden. I don't like to hand pick. I've got a few deterrents in the book, so it will collect, you know, if flies get out of control or if Stink bugs get out of control. I have a few traps that can help to trap the excess of the pests. But in general, if you're planting biodiversity and a different kind of plants, different kinds of predators being invited into your garden, then the ecosystem should start to balance itself out. It's a little bit hard to wait for it, but once it does, then it feels, you know, like you've finally gotten into harmony with the garden.
Well, that makes some sense as well, although it you're right, it can take some time.
Yeah, I mean, something like scale is an indication that the plant is, if the plant is thriving and there's scale on it, then it's very hard to remove. I think it's difficult to look at each individual pest and more look at, you know, is there another plant that can be planted instead of the one that's being more affected? Is there one that's more resistant? Is there a different type of plant? Is this in the right area? Because typically if you've got healthy plants and biodiversity and balance in your garden, then you have a lot less work in chasing down each individual pest and more time to enjoy your garden.
That makes sense. You have quite a nice section on fertilizers as well in your book.
Yes. Well, I think there's a lot of natural fertilizers that you can use, and I've done a bunch of recipes for granular fertilizers. But also, there's a lot of plants growing in your garden that make great garden teas. And so imagine, you know, when you're out there, if you've got a lawn, you're out there cutting the lawn or cutting down green clippings of all this healthy plants just to, you know, cut back some of the plants that we want to keep under control. And then you can take those, put them in a bucket of water, let that steep for 72 hours, strain it out, and you've got a really nutritious garden tea that you can use to water next time. Then you just take what's ever left in that bin and throw it right into the compost. And so you can do that with weeds as well. The only thing I caution you, when you're doing grass and leaves and that sort of thing that doesn't have any disease or pest present, you can do that in a colander-like bucket. And I've got directions for how to make the colander bucket in the book. 2 5-gallon buckets, and one has holes drilled in it. But if you're doing weeds, you don't want to have any little bit of root or seeds or anything like that added back into your garden. So put that in a pillowcase instead. And so just use it like a giant tea bag. And then you can strain out those weeds, get all the great nutrients, because weeds are just amazing for being nutritious garden plants. And, you know, squeeze that out, throw those in the compost, and then you can water your garden with this nutritious weed tea.
You've got lots of great ideas, Stephanie. It's really fun talking with you today. Thanks so much for being with us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. It's been a lot of fun.
Stephanie Rose is the author, and the book is titled Garden Alchemy. Lots of great tips on making your garden organic and making it maybe not quite pest-free, but it would certainly cut down on anything, any chemicals that you might have to use in it. Great to have her with us. Maybe we'll get her back and do it again. Thank you so much for listening. Tomorrow at this time, we'll learn about the Hmong people of Wisconsin and take a look at different look at the Civil War. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.